for dinner and people show up. Huh?
Yeah. We'll call the regular meeting of July 7th to order and show that everybody is present. Thank you for dinner. It's very nice of the health department. We have the approval of minutes from June 2nd. Has everybody had a chance to take a look at them and read them?
I'm on there twice for being present. There's Alexandra and there's Abby. So I don't know if that's an issue.
Oh, your name?
Yeah.
Ty, I think you were here too.
I was here.
Yeah, I was like,
and then you left. Yeah,
so I was here.
I saw you.
Yeah, you were there, so that's not fun.
Okay,
so glad you're there.
Okay.
Kim, did you get that correction? Anything else?
Move to accept as corrected.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Passed. Clark County Public Health.
So just a couple quick things. I'll reserve a lot of our time for the presentation, which we'll see later. First, I don't know if everyone's met Dr. Melnick yet. Dr. Melnick's joining us tonight, the Director and Health Officer for Public Health.
And we're seeing everybody.
He was here at the last meeting. Also tonight, a new face is Kevin Rochelle. Kevin has joined us this summer to help fill in while Melissa Sutton has been on maternity leave and has a long, strong background in environmental engineering, and he's been a great help. You'll get to know him better. He's going to talk a lot about, he did most of the research to answer the questions that you guys presented to us about the termination of the permit for Circle C. Lastly, about this time of year, our second quarter report to ecology on our solid waste activities is submitted, but we'll be preparing that. We'll just send that out to the SWAC once that's completed. That's really all I have at the moment. I don't know. I know Roxanne's here, and there were a lot of questions about the transition. So I think this would be as good a time as any if there were any other questions related to that at the moment.
Did you find enough room for these guys?
We did. So we were able to find some space on the fourth floor, so we're going to be on the third and fourth floor.
But they won't have nosebleeds?
Hopefully not. Okay. So we're drawing straws on who's going to be on the fourth floor right now, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, they probably won't be on the fourth floor because that's a smaller space and we'll probably be together with their earlier environmental health program. I can't guarantee parking for everybody.
They should ride their bikes anyway.
Yes, a lot of them already do.
Does that mean, are we then considering moving this meeting over to that building since all your staff is there?
So I don't anticipate that the SWEO staff will actually move over until sometime in November because we have to build out the space and some other folks are moving around. So for the time being, the meeting will still be here. If it makes sense to move it over there, we certainly can. We have our public health advisory council meetings over there too, so we have the space. The question is just what's convenient. We still have this room available too, so we may still have it here, we may have it there. It depends on the advisory.
And in the evenings, parking is not a problem there at all.
No one is okay.
Do you have the water people over there too?
Which what you mean?
The clean water folks are actually under public works still.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they're still here.
All right, well, thanks, Paloma. We're done.
Any other questions? Okay, Rich, you're up.
Well, I didn't have any big news to report, but I did see today that the ecology is doing some workshops on the new solid waste handling standards, 173350. So I gave you all examples of the list of, there's 18 different areas where they're changing the regulations. So that's the list of that, and it gives a list of where the workshops are. It's like an all-day workshop at Lacey's, the next one for us. And then there's online, I've given you one example of the sort of focus sheet they have, like changing the definition of solid waste a little bit, or refining that is one of the topics. And then there are 17 other topics. So I can pass around the full piece that has each page is a different one of those topics that's on this list. If you want to download all of the changes, it's like 450 pages. So you're free to do that too. And there's a link to the website there if you want to type that in on the Ecology website. So I'll just pass this around if you guys want to look through that just to see if there's anything you might be interested in. There's some nice pictures.
What was your place?
In Olympia. That's a State Department of Ecology headquarters, I think.
Out there where they can smell that mushroom plant.
That might be it, yeah.
That's it.
Thanks. Well, we finished our spring coupon program, and I had some stats, but I'm not going to bore you all with them.
Numbers
are up a little bit. Yeah. We don't have all of the data in yet. We still have a couple sites we're waiting for invoices from through the end of June. It seems like it's keeping track and keeping up. It looks like we're still having good response from people that get their coupons in the bills, and also the people that have online billing now, which is about a quarter of them. So both groups are responding well to the coupon program.
Good.
Scott?
Nothing to report this week.
Okay. And that's back to you, Pete.
Okay. Just a couple updates. We're going to be having a natural garden tour coming up. So I'm going to pass around some booklets here. This is part of our work to eliminate the use of pesticides and do more natural gardening. It's a great opportunity to come out and meet. We've partnered with the Master Gardeners. Very fun event. We've got a couple ACE interns helping out with this program. And Sally Fisher oversees the project. We had an amazing Recycled Arts Festival. And if I could, we could play just a quick video here.
Well, thousands of things that were once headed for a landfill now have a whole new purpose.
Core Hoagland is live with a preview of this weekend's Recycled Arts Festival in Vancouver. Good morning, Core. What do you have for us?
Morning, Trevor, and morning, Ken. I'm just showing everybody the mini house that we actually slept in last night. Came here about 8 o'clock last night with three kids, and the kids are still inside the house. But this is the mini house. It's about 250 square feet inside. It's just part of the theme for the Clark County Recycled Arts Festival this weekend, using a lower impact on the earth, using fewer resources. This is housing in the future right here. It's a lot less expensive than all the rest of the stuff. And we have what we would consider, I think, to be more traditionally thought of recycled art. There's a lot of recycled glass work in here. There's tail lights. There's broken necklaces in some of this, in addition to broken stained glass. And Terry Powers is a guy with some welding talent here and a knack for picking things out and making things out of this. Terry, tell me just first of all a little bit about this piece right here.
Well, it's a power meter that we got from the power company gave me these to make art only out of. I've got to make art. It's just a meter dog, we call it.
A meter dog with lug nuts as eyes and a lug nut as a nose and sockets as his eyes, right?
Yeah, and a rebar. So he's pretty much all recycled.
This is pretty cool stuff here. Now, Corey Dollar here is the with the recycled headline in here. Is this one person's trash? Is somebody else's treasure?
Yes, it is. And this is also on a recycled microwave plate.
Gosh, I didn't even notice that. It totally is, yeah. All right, and this is stuff this is very typical of the flavor and the type of stuff that you can see out here. As you can see down here, Corey's got a broken necklace that's actually been worked into a piece here. And this is a 100-year-old piece of block glass that's put on as well. There'll be 150 exhibitors this weekend. 150 exhibitors this weekend here at Esther Short Park in downtown Vancouver. This is just a small taste of what you can get. You can take a tour of the mini house if you'd like. Come by here and look at all the cool little knickknacks that, as they say, these people have turned some people's trash into some pretty cool treasures here, Trevor.
So I don't know if folks had a chance to get down there. I know Roxanne and Bob too. Appreciate that. Come on, stop by. Have a chance to go down. You guys walk away with anything?
No. It was, oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you get?
For my mother, one of the very brightly colored metal bird houses.
Yeah. I got a bird house too.
it was a huge success. We also, it was our first year. Michelle Pacinich did a great job getting sponsors. So we had McCord Toyota was there, BioClean. Sold out. All of our sponsorships raised about $30,000.
Awesome.
On that, we also charge our booth space, so we brought another $10,000 there. So it's a sustainable event. Biggest and best ever. Probably about 30,000 people came through. So that was an excellent team effort. We also brought in a whole lot of volunteers, and we had 172 shifts. We were able to fill 91% of them. So we had 156 volunteer shifts filled at the event. So really engaging the community there for 400 plus hours. Let's see, we have been working on the paint piece. We'll probably bring this back in the future, but on December 1st, there's going to be a Washington State Recycling Association tour of the Metro Paint facility. And then we're also working with Stericycle, who collects our paint from our paint stores. They are getting ready to begin that local processing paint factory that we've been trying to get here in Clark County. So they are still moving forward and that progress is being made. So I wanted to give you that update as well. Lots of other great stuff going on, and I'll pass on to Kim.
Thanks. One quick thing. So the residue study, we've done 3 sorts now, and so there's just 1 sort left for the multifamily. And again, this is a study of the contamination in the carts, so we're going to have a real idea of what is ending up in there. So on July 16th, which is a Saturday, is our last sort. So if you're interested in volunteering, just let me know.
And Alan has been one of those volunteers?
No.
We appreciate it.
I escaped this time, and I'm going to be suffering in Reno on the next one, too.
And we did get some feedback. Maybe, Mike, you can just very briefly, we did get some preliminary information back on the deceleration lane land.
Yeah, the land acquisition, you know, it's a kind of a two-part deal where you get an initial appraisal and then all the parties get the opportunity to review it. So we've received an initial appraisal, and now it'll have to go to Real Property Services, and the folks that do that were not here this week, so they'll get it. Purley Development will get it, and he also will go to his own appraiser of his choice. But eventually they'll come back with negotiating positions based on those appraisals. We expect within a couple of weeks we're going to have a little firmer information to bring to you as far as what's coming out of those negotiations and what those appraisals look like. But at this point, it's very, you know, preliminary, and until our folks have reviewed it upstairs, it's not something we usually let out, because there could be mistakes in there that we don't know about. And so, well, we need to let the experts look at it, and then we'll come back to you. Or you guys want to have a meeting in August?
Pardon?
No meeting in August?
That's not been determined.
Okay, I wasn't sure or not. It might be as early as August.
But the landowner is still interested.
Yes.
He has not walked away from us.
Yes, in fact, he has opted to implement the development that he had 2 plans that went to the hearings examiner, one with the drop lane and one without. He's going to build the one with the drop lane incorporated. So I think we're going to get the property, just a matter of what that costs after damages.
It's about 8,000 plus, a little bit, square feet.
mostly a frontage.
Yeah,
one they, lot. You know,
that's exactly the type of information that Real Property Services needs to go back to the plan, make sure that they've acquired enough property, that appraisal is correct. And once we have all that information and everybody's satisfied, that's when they start to come together. And it's a little different than a public to private, but it's basically, the rules are very similar.
It's looking positive, and that's the first step down the road.
And one other quick update is that this is more technical fun stuff, but I'm at that final phases of preparing the application for the master plan and submitting it to community development and development engineering for review. That's due the 26th of July. We're kind of waiting for a traffic study to come in, and that's about the last piece that has to be done before it goes in. And that's in progress. So that'll be a milestone, and I can't remember the review period, but it's pretty extended. It's 45 to 60 days or something like that that they have to review it. So we'll be coming back to you with some comments on that later to let you know how that is going. This time, I'm hoping we do not get pulled into the hearing with examiners.
And we do have a meeting scheduled for August.
Yes.
You got anything else?
Ready?
I don't know what you're doing, so.
What's new?
My back is to a wall. I can see the windows.
It may not be at the level of your most recent honoring, but.
that was 25 or 20 plus years.
So we are honored to have had you on this SWAC for 12 years. Your knowledge, institutional background is going to be greatly missed. And we're going to do kind of a three-part honoring, and then we can certainly hear from all of the SWAC members, but we certainly want to have an opportunity to honor you and your time and your service. And in light of that, I wrote a limerick, which I just wrote, so it may not be great. From the Boise Cascade Paper Mill to the Hauck Foundation Fruit Valley Landfill was not the last hurrah transferred to La Framboise, then Portside, Roofner, and now Leahy's Bill. So, if you haven't followed all these pieces, Don has, and we're going to really miss that piece, and we're still in the midst of it. I wish we could have full closure, but we are, I think you can rest easy. Rich, can Don rest easy in his retirement from SWAC?
You bet.
All right.
Thank you.
So in honor of your work with that landfill and just all of your work with SWAC, Chuck helped us come up with a great idea. So I'm going to pass the baton here.
All right, please.
And these are wonderful framed.
So yeah, so Don, to also honor your time serving Clark County and the Solid Waste Advisory Commission, we knew that you'd always want to take with you a memory of all the landfills and transfer stations, etc. So this map was created through the GIS team. And if all the SWAC members and others here who know Don haven't had a chance, there's an opportunity to write a quick note thanking him or wishing him well on here. And I've memorized the letter from Chairman Bolt, but it's taped on the back, so I'll just read it. This is from Chair of the Board of Commissioners, Mike Bolt. The Board of County Councilors would like to express our appreciation for the time you have spent serving your community on the Solid Waste Advisory Commission. We feel fortunate that so many citizens with such diverse backgrounds and strong abilities indicated an interest and willingness to invest their time in assisting us in our community. We wish you every success in your future endeavors. So,
thank you.
Do you want me to give this to you, or would you like to hear?
Too late. Leave it up there.
Just leave it over there.
Yeah,
okay.
Leave it up there.
Again,
yeah,
others haven't had a chance.
We have a rosewood box.
There's a couple of pens here.
You have a rosewood box. There's a fishing too.
Oh. And Kim's going to make our final presentation. This goes out to the VIPs.
That's cool.
So now you
roll
up one of our very rare Samuel Awards.
An elite group.
Yes. Very few people.
Thank you. Those are cool. Those are really
deserve it.
Wow.
Thank you. Yeah.
Mark Bolt made that comment about community involvement, and that's not just me, that's everybody here. I mean, this is the way we spend our Wild Thursday nights, and it's from everybody, or it's a way of thanking everybody, I think, from the chairman. Thanks, all of you have contributed to this over the years, so thank you all. Now we can move on. SWAC rules and procedures.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I get to say I've had to work with you for 12 years. I had to work.
There we go.
Oh, hey, we're still here.
That's a good point.
No, I do. As one professional solid waste guy to another, it's been a pleasure. And I really do appreciate the service you've given this community. And you're going to Arizona, is that correct? Well, don't get too much of a sunburn down there. I'm sure you'll enjoy the snowbirding and the lifestyle down there.
Well, thank you for everything you've done. I mean, we've had our ups and our downs, but you've always answered us honestly. And you've always done what you said you were going to do, which is quite commendable.
Well, I appreciate that also. So enjoy yourself in your retirement, and you're going to be missed.
Thank you.
Maybe we got more.
I would also, just to express my sincere appreciation for your industry knowledge. And that's very useful in the fact that operationally you understand so many different things that are tied to this industry. And your voice of reason on numerous different occasions has been greatly appreciated by me. And I thank you very much, and on behalf of Waste Connections, welcome to this next chapter in your life.
Thank you. I hope I do better than Eric Merrill did. You don't know Eric.
You could be called back.
Yeah, Eric was called back. He was my mentor for retirement. He'd been with Waste Management and Waste Connections for years. Big to do retirement, 90 days in Hawaii with no cell phone. The wife was animate about it. And he just happened to get a phone call, and he's now in Missouri.
He's in Missouri.
He was called back into active duty, I guess. Yeah. That's a nice way to put it.
For a 90-day assignment that we all know is going to be at least 6 months.
Yeah.
In Missouri.
In Missouri, yes.
So, John, I think you're also a City of Vancouver resident, right?
Yes.
Yes, and thank you for representing us on the SWAC, really, as an industry role, but also from being a citizen of Vancouver, also it's important to have that knowledge. You've always given thoughtful comments and passionate advocacy for the things that matter.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate that.
I'd just like to say, as a new person, newish person on the commission, I would really like to thank you for all your help and encyclopedic knowledge of what happens here. Thank you.
Thank you. Now can we talk about the rules?
It's 110 degrees in Arizona. You can always change your mind.
Yeah, about management has already said. I wanted to get my 25-year pin, but I'm about a year short.
Oh.
And they offered to let me stay for another year. No, thank you.
It's got to be the whole year, though.
Yeah, it's got to be the whole year. You want to lead this part, or you want me to do it, or do you want me to talk about how we've done it in the past?
I think that would be good.
Well, I've got two ways of reading the rules about the succession plan for chairman. And what we've done in the past, and how I got stuck, is I didn't go to the meeting, so I got stuck. But we have typically taken the vice chair, moved them to chair, and then elect a vice chair. and I don't have a problem with that. Or we could go, I mean, the rules are up there. And we could even, you could even wait till next meeting because I'm not actually vacated it yet. But it's kind of your choice. Alan has said that he would take it. I will let you explain your restrictions so everybody understands it.
Well, I'm here to help out any way I can. And I'm avidly involved in reading widely, and I'll never be able to have the breadth of experience that Don has here, but I'm willing to do it. I've chaired a few things before, and while I don't have the institutional memory, I think I could do okay on this. And my only problem is I also go to Arizona, but I do come back. So I disappear about Christmas, or about the first, I probably disappear about the first time in December and come back probably in April or so. So whoever's the vice chair would probably have about almost half the time, or 4 or 5 months of experience during the winter time while I'm gone. And if that meets anybody's, everybody's approval, I have no problem with it. I also have no problem with staying with being the vice chair, continuing there and helping out any way I can. And of course, being continuing on even as a member. So whatever the group figures out, we'll go with it.
And one piece is Alan's position is up for, his term is up, but we can work on a reappointment for that. And he has kindly offered to stay.
Suggestions?
Comments? I have some problems. You can pick the vice chair. It's going to be around for him. He's gone.
Well, you want to make a motion to that effect?
Yeah, I'll make a motion for Alan to go from vice chair to chairman.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All those in favor of Alan stepping up?
Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, now lock the door. We need a vice chair who will be chair through the winter time. Any volunteers? It's really not a hard job. I would suggest you, but I know you're going to be slightly...
Wintertime's not good.
Wintertime's not good for you.
I always do. He's not here.
They're all here.
They're all here.
They knew. They knew.
We do this. Our favorite four-letter word, food.
Now, we do have one piece. We will have a new member beginning in August, so we could skip ahead and see if that changes any of the discussion, which is the update on the solid waste industry representative. Don has represented that position for 12 years and did a lot of research and found that most counties do have their local hauler on SWAC, and in his good work, he did not leave us in the lurch, and he did quite a bit of work with the counselors, with staff, to see if we could bring on a Waste Connections representative. And Scott Campbell has willingly accepted and has been appointed into that position beginning August next year. And we do have that letter as
this
well.
Year.
This year, excuse me, August of this year, thank you. So, welcome. In August. We're very lucky to have Scott.
Well, he brings...
a huge community asset.
Besides a huge community asset, he brings the historical. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to bring, is that
He's been to more of these meetings than most of the people. How long have you been?
Well, let's see. I think the only person that's been here longer was Gary Pickett. He retired 2 years ago. Okay. So,
yeah, a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. 20 plus, easy.
Well, that experience is what prompted me to push for Scott.
Yes.
Good idea. So you're suggesting or asking if we want to wait until the next meeting when Scott's seated?
Well, we could have a discussion now.
I thought he was nominating Scott.
Oh, well, he can't nominate.
You nominate beginning of next month.
Do we want to wait until he's
Scott, is that a role that you're comfortable performing?
I'm fine with that, with the caveat that I would encourage those that are already on the board. If there's any interest. I would certainly take, obviously that should be taken into consideration, those that are on the SWAC now. And that would be my recommendation.
No pressure.
No, but since you were the only one being stared at. To your committee, folks, what would you like to do?
I move that we table this discussion until next month.
No, I'm not here next month.
Oh. So that means you're going to be there, right?
Perfect. Perfect.
Congratulations.
Might as well just jump to the conclusion.
It's been moved and seconded to table it until the next meeting for the vice chair's position. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Okay. Campaign speech is ready.
Stevens. Recommendation from the Board of County Commissioners. I believe everybody got a copy of that.
Pete, you did a couple changes on it. Did you email that to everybody?
I did, but I think we wanted to keep it original.
The only reason it came up was in June, we said that we agree with the mission to protect groundwater and the regional sole source aquifer lies beneath the landfill. So what they're doing at the casino is the sole source aquifer line beneath the casino that they're putting wastewater in. So I thought, well, if we're doing that, then I know them. Board of Councilors is working on that. That back and forth conversation with some of the councilors, email and everything. So all that this is trying to do is to say, hey, you know, keep it up and keep looking at it, see if there's something we can do. I went to the June 30th meeting in La Center where the tribe gave two different talks on stuff, and it was very interesting. They were, they said they tried three times to propose to go into the La Center wastewater treatment plant, but lawsuits and the county's urban growth boundary, I think it's called, wouldn't allow it. Why it can't be changed is beyond me, but obviously politics are involved. So, all this is trying to do is say, hey, county, can you figure out a way, if they're going to do it now, can you figure out a way in the future to have them tie into something or whatever? I brought up an emergency tie-in, and they said, that's a good idea. So if they have a problem with their system, they can turn a valve, and they can go to La Center, or they can go to Ridgefield, which would come down here to San Diego. Whether anybody's going to do that or not, I don't know. So that's all I was trying to do is to say, hey, keep looking at it. I know they're looking at it. But with the new council coming on in November, it may even be better. So anyway, that's my spiel, whether we want to do that or not, and say from this board, oh, is that really solid waste? But if leachate into the aquifer is part of our purveyor, then I think that wastewater is too. So that's why I wrote that. I don't know if this, I don't think that's Pete's update. You didn't change a whole lot though, did you, Pete?
No. And again, I know Alan, Dr. Mullix had quite a bit of experience on this, was on CBPB, and so I wanted to make sure we had discussion as well.
So who sent this out?
It hasn't gone out yet. Sure. We've internally been reviewing it.
But it was in packets, so yeah. Then I don't have it.
Yes, hasn't gone out yet. This is discussion.
Right. And then this is just discussion. It went. I wrote it, it went to Don and Pete, and then Pete made some changes, and I thought it went back out, but maybe it didn't.
It hasn't gone out, back out.
No, back out to this group.
Yes. Some of the discussion, too, is if it's applicable for this Solid Waste Advisory Commission to push forward this message.
Well, I'm going to put in my two cents worth, because we are concerned about the leachate in Circle C landfill. That's one of the criteria that's on your list, Chuck. It's one of the things you've got to watch with any landfill that's got anything bad and the groundwater contamination. Now, these two properties are not that far apart. And actually, Circle C is lower in elevation and closer to the aquifer. I'm going from my memory. I don't know that we've really defined yet how many gallons of leachate is coming out of that landfill.
There's not a good.
Well, you said something picture. In your.
But that's part of the requirements that we're laying out that they will do a more quantitative assessment of that criteria that we're talking more about later. Yes.
Okay, well, if we're going to watch the leachate out of there. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we are watching the leachate out of Lightners.
Yeah, we monitor the groundwater constantly. Okay. Yes.
Constantly. For the same reason, then, to my logic, we need to say, hey, we're monitoring Lightners, we're monitoring other closed landfills for smaller amounts of groundwater contamination. So consequently, at 400,000 gallons a day, we need to at least let our feelings be known to the Board of County Councilors that leachate is nasty, sewer is nasty. Probably the treatment program is workable that they've got.
Well, the way they're doing it. That's a good system until it fails.
Until it fails, and then it's our water. Yeah, it's our water. It's our water that generations are going to drink. But the leachate that I've seen come out of landfills, from my experience, I'll tell you a little story. There's a landfill that's not on a map like you gave me in Pullman. I don't know who's got it on their radar, but there used to be a truck frame rail that sat at the base of the berm of the landfill. And it was always wet there. Even in the summertime, it was wet there. And over the course of about 15 years calling on this customer, that frame rail disappeared. The leachate materials coming out of that landfill disintegrated a 3/8 thick, 10-inch wide frame rail off of the truck. That stuff is going someplace. From Circle C, from Lightners. It's got to be monitored, it's got to be maintained. If we're going to spend the effort for a small amount, we need to spend an effort for a big amount. They're going to do what they want to do upstairs anyway. But I think it's just we just make a recommendation. The counselors make the decision. So that's my two cents worth.
I just want to, after going to that meeting last week, They said it could go up to 400,000, but that could be 10 to 15 years down the line when the whole thing built up. Currently, it's going to be about, they're saying maybe 100,000, like when they start it next April or whatever. So I don't know if that's really, it's a true statement that it could be the 400,000, it might be 15, 20 years down the line.
But the system will be built for that.
Yes.
Now, on the 21st of June, the county passed their 20-year growth management plan. Was there anything addressed at this in the plan that you folks know about?
No.
Wouldn't you think that a 400,000-gallon operation should be somehow included in the growth management plan?
No.
Especially if it's going to go out there for 20 years. And I was also wondering if the solid waste folk, if we had any contribution that was discussed in the 20-year growth plan that was passed on the 21st.
That,
you know, because Mike's been working on that, trying to get another transfer station, and that certainly 20 years from now will be clear up to here in garbage. You know,
yeah, we do have a section in there.
Okay. Yeah, it's capital facilities plan.
I have a question for Dr. Mellon, because I don't understand it. I haven't been to the presentations, but it might be relative. But are they required or compelled to have groundwater monitoring as part of the system?
Well, so that's a really good question. So they're a sovereign nation, and the system is on their reservation land. So supposedly their system meets EPA standards, but there's basically no real monitoring, no distinct monitoring plan with the EPA.
That's not what they said.
So what we did was, I can tell you what our, because we reviewed this whole thing and made a recommendation. So the bottom line is the statute basically says that if you're outside an urban growth boundary, the reservation plan is right outside the urban growth boundary of La Center, you can't tie into public services like sewer. So they wanted to originally, it would have only cost them $3 million to hook into the sewer system. What they're building is going to cost them $15 million, their membrane system and injection well system. We didn't weigh in on this a couple of years ago. We weren't asked, but there is an exception in the statute that for a public health necessity, and not an emergency, it's public health necessity, you can be allowed to hook up to an urban service, even if you're outside the growth boundary. So we made a recommendation, or we recommended that, you know, that for public health necessity, the tribe ought to be allowed to hook up to the La Center sewer system. The tribe originally wanted that. La Center originally wanted that as well. The opposition was the county and the card rooms, I believe. And as you know, there's that lawsuit, and the judge basically said, prevented the tribe from hooking up to the sewer based on that lawsuit. We said if that doesn't happen, if the tribe isn't allowed to hook up to the sewer system and they go ahead and build this membrane system, and by the, you know, the water coming out, even at 400,000 gallons a day, supposedly meets potable standards. And we can talk about personal care products and all that other stuff, but it meets potable standards. But we basically said if they're going to do that, we believe, and this is what we presented to the board, that we should have local and state oversight in terms of monitoring. We should be able to monitor it locally. So whatever reports the company that's putting their system in, called Parametrics, they're gathering data all the time. They're reporting it. They're monitoring the system. We basically said our recommendation to the board is that we ought to be able to have access in real time to the data from their whatever data they're collecting in terms of monitoring the system. There's a variety of measures on that, so that if something did break down, we could immediately act on it. Right now, we're in discussions, possibly, now that we're allowed to talk to the tribe, we're putting together what will look like an intergovernmental agreement with the tribe to give us access to the monitoring data. So I'm hopeful that at least that will come out of this. If we can reach an agreement with the tribe, at least we'll be able to monitor this. So if something does go wrong, we'll be able to act on it. You know, it's a very high-tech system. You probably all, you know, you probably read about it. You could read the parametrics report. But as other folks said, things can go wrong with it. Like, you know, these membranes can break down. But we're hopeful if at least we have the monitoring data, we'll be able to act on it immediately. So that's, we're looking to have some sort of agreement with that. From what I can gather from the hearings that I've been at, the tribe is reluctant to go ahead and do that because they've already invested money in their system, number one. And even if the county withdraws, the county was a plaintiff to that lawsuit. Even if the county withdraws, the card rooms are still still plaintiffs in that, and they may not withdraw their suit. So the tribe probably concerned that they're not going to be allowed to hook up to the sewer, even if we say they're allowed to do that. That's my gut feeling on that. That's why they're moving along with this. I probably gave you too much information. I don't know, but our feeling is if we can monitor this thing really closely and have access to the data, I don't trust the EPA or the agreements that the EPA is going to protect us as well as if we could have local access to the data that's coming out of the system.
What is in place for, there is a problem, what is in place for the emergency transfer of that effluent material to the La Center system?
There is no plan to transfer anything to the La Center system.
If it breaks.
They have storage. They have, I think,
2 days.
Correct me if I'm wrong, they have 2 days of storage. So if this thing is recognized when it first breaks down, if we're recognizing it quickly, they have storage capacity for 2 days on their on the reservation land around this area. They probably, I don't know how they'd get it out of there. They might have to truck it out or something. There's no agreement with La Center to use their sewer system.
That's not a very big...
No, 2 days is not...
Well, you'd have to shut down. What they would have to do is stop generating the waste. If you recognize a problem, they'd have to close the casino down.
But they have not just the casino, but they have build-out and everything. There's going to be other stuff there. They have to shut everything down.
Right, they'd have to shut everything down.
It's probably not going to happen in 2 days to shut everything down.
I think that could.
They said they don't want to shut down. That's why they need an emergency tie-in somewhere, or if they have a bad thing, if they lost power there,
they'd have to shut the whole thing down.
So,
but if they lost power, they couldn't operate anything in the casino anyway. You can't have a restaurant. Cool. You can't have anything if you don't have power. And I'm sure they got backup. I mean, that's something you have backup generators for, but.
The reason I wrote that in the two-day thing, and I told them I've seen failures more than 2 days. If you work in the industry, you see that. That's where, when we talked about emergency thing, they said, oh, that'd be a good idea. Well, if they can get some kind of an emergency declaration, then they said they can tie in. Whether they would do it or not, I don't know. But the water that comes out of there, your personal products and stuff that you say, it only removes like 50 to 75%. And there's no studies. They say, well, maybe the soil will take this stuff out. Well, if the soil doesn't, I mean, if that gets into the water eventually, at our plant, we were changing the sex of the fishes right out of our effluent. So, I mean, it's not good stuff that's going to go in there. And they don't know if it's going to get taken out. There's no studies on it yet.
Yeah, so we're feeling if there is a breakdown and it wasn't shut up, we could declare an emergency. I mean, the aquifer goes
but
beyond the reservation.
If you don't have a tie-in, it doesn't do
any good. Excuse me?
If you don't have a tie-in where it can go.
No, they'd have to shut everything down and stop generating. And we, you know, I mean, if we had to, and you know, given that the aquifer goes beyond their land, I think they would shut down anyway. I don't think they have an intent to contaminate the aquifer. I don't think they really want to do that either. But I mean, if we had to declare a public health emergency, if there were effluent, contaminated effluent going into the ground, I think we could do that.
But we think we could.
No, I could. We could.
Well, that's their sovereign nation, and I've dealt with sovereign nations my whole career, and the rules are different. I mean, you can walk on, you can have nice agreements, but if they don't want to cooperate, I'm really reluctant to accept that Clark County has got the authority to push the shutdown of a sovereign nation.
Yeah, I think if they were unwilling to shut down and there was a threat mm-hmm. beyond their property to the aquifer, I believe we could do something.
Well, I think they would shut down.
From and I think they would shut. I don't think they.
But
could.
They don't want to.
Excuse
they lose
me?
A lot of money. Well, yeah. They have to shut down.
I think they'd have. Well.
Yeah. So, I didn't. I thought after the discussion last month that I did not expect this topic to come back up again this month. This is a very touchy topic with the city of Vancouver. I don't feel this is, where me being the only elected on this board, I don't feel I can vote on something, especially something that I haven't even seen, without taking that back to council and having a conversation with council. Yeah, I'm feeling really kind of caught off guard at the moment.
But you want to get the revision out to everybody for the next meeting?
If you have your revision, if you made a couple of changes, I didn't have a problem with it. Do you want to send it out to everybody?
I will need.
This isn't going to the Vancouver City Council. This is going to the county.
I understand, but I am here, my role on this board is a representative of the Vancouver City Council. Many things I feel like I can act without having to consult my fellow councilors. Given the nature of this topic, I do not feel I can act without having a conversation with my fellow councilors.
Well, your council, I mean, that's fine, we can do that. They won't be surprised they've got an email. Not this email, but other emails. You've gotten them from me, too.
What are you guys feeling like you're going to recommend? Or do you, I've been reading this. Are you making some specific recommendations?
Well, all the recommendation is just continue the efforts to collaborate with the other governmental agencies that are doing it now. Just continue to follow up with it. That's all the recommendation is. It's not change anything. It's just do what they're doing right now. It isn't say to go spend money or anything, It's just try to get an answer to where we're not going to screw up our groundwater. That's the bottom line without all the gobbledygook.
When I was preparing our recommendations to the board, and that was presented at a couple of months ago at the Board of Health meeting, mm-hmm. we had spoken to State Department of Health, we spoke to the Department of Ecology, we spoke to the Clark PUD. Who else did we speak to, Chuck? We really...
Key people.
Excuse me?
I mean, we also had conversations with EPA. And
EPA. We had some conversations with the EPA, and we felt that if the sewer piece wasn't an option, that we felt that, and our colleagues agreed with us, that having a monitoring system in place that we would be able to respond to was an alternative that we could accept. And that was after talking with our colleagues, statewide, as nationally as well as locally.
It has to be distributed to us.
Yes, of course. Yeah, this was meant for more discussion mm-hmm. because I don't think we were at the place
to make a motion.
To make a vote, we needed, it's great that Dr. Mellon's here and the information he's imparting on us. I mean, there's a lot, it is a very political issue. It's hard, we're nine members, one member has an idea, but we could have nine different letters. Mm-hmm. We don't want to waste our time voting on nine different letters. So I think it's more, this is a recommending body really around solid waste issues, is if there's a clear link to solid waste, which there may be, monitoring, program. We certainly should go down that path, but...
We monitor the landfills.
We monitor landfills.
Get the power to monitor, like you're saying.
So it's making a stretch from a water quality issue to a landfill water quality issue, which we clearly have purview over. If they were trying to build on the Circle C landfill and were, you know, or Leichner breaking into the cap, clearly SWAC would want to be weighing in on that.
Well, they have a system, if he wants to monitor, it's an electronic system. They can tie into anything you've got here. You don't have to run out there and look at anything. It's a wonderful system. And if, as long as operators and stuff are looking at that, but that's where you have your failures, is the people, it's a people failure more than it is a...
So what we're working on and we're going to present to the tribe doesn't it only include monitoring the data that's coming out, but it also gives us the right to go on to the and Chuck, you know, you were working on this as well, so Phil, and gives us the right to actually go in and take a look at the system and see how it's doing. So we're not just relying on some electronic data that's coming our way. We certainly want that. We want to know. We want to know if they're finding, you know, turbidity goes up, their coliforms, nitrates, or anything like that. But we also will, if the tribe agrees to it, when we, you know, we develop this memorandum of understanding or intergovernmental agreement that we're working with a county prosecuting attorney on, that we'd be able to go onto the reservation property and take a look at this as well. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chuck.
That's part of the
draft agreement. I don't have it in the, it's just a draft now. We have not presented it to the, we have not met with the tribe. We're still working on it internally. And once we feel good about where we're at, then we'll go ahead and we'll have our attorney talk with the tribe's attorney and see if we can work something like that on. But it'll include the ability to do an inspection, you know, take a look at it, if that helps.
But if you get their data, I mean, it's a great system. Until it fails.
Oh, the membrane system and the injection? It can actually, the water coming out of it is supposedly potable water, but it's not like leachate, theoretically, unless something goes wrong. And we're optimistic that if something goes wrong and we can deal with it right then and there, we can protect the groundwater.
We have people involved. That's the scary part. I mean, we've got people, we've got a 2-day window of storage.
But honestly, you know, I don't think the tribe really wants to adversely affect the Troutdale Aquifer. I mean, I think they're...
Well, they don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, so... And I think if we're working with them really closely on an agreement, for me, that's the next best alternative. Obviously, the proposed alternative would be to hook into the sewer system, but they're prevented from doing that.
They did give the county, they said the county in the last few months has been a lot more cooperative with them, which was good news.
Yeah, it's gotten really, I mean, for the first time I was able to talk to the tribe as well. We couldn't talk to them before.
On the other side of the membrane, the solids that are separated from this, which we could deal with, what happens to them and where are they going?
They truck them.
We just truck it out, just like they do out of our wastewater plant.
They get the solid and so they truck them out. And they do have a backup system, so they've got two systems. One goes down, and that's good. So it's not a bad system. It's a $15 million system that they wouldn't have to do if they could have tied into the...
It would have been $3 million to tie into the sewer. And they're also going to have to pay for maintenance. I mean, it's a lot more expensive for them to do what they're doing. For $3 million, and it would have benefited the city of La Center because it would have helped them out in their debt payments on their sewer system.
Well, and they already had the capacity.
They have the capacity.
But hopefully we can work through the ego issues. I mean, that's, to me, the ideal thing would be to work through the egos, find a way to run it into the center, if it can be done.
I think there's a judge's order, whatever, standing between that. So,
So it sounds like you guys would like a copy of this latest recommendation to go out for you to review and then bring it back up next meeting. Is that kind of where you're landed?
And Don gets out of it.
That's why I wanted to state my view on it. And if I come back,
I need to see that no later than the 18th. Yeah, we'll send that out tonight.
Are you going to send that out here?
We need a motion to move this to our next meeting.
Pardon?
Do we need a motion to move this to our next
meeting? I would like to have it, yeah.
Let's move to discuss this next meeting, the August meeting.
I'll second it.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And then can we have the revised copy out? You need it by the 18th, say?
Yeah.
Or sooner? The last thing we need is him getting blindsided by his people.
Yes, yes. Well, I think that's what we're going to discussion.
Not the last thing.
Well, we let you come back from Coeur d'Alene. Chuck, you're up on your criteria for the post-closure in Circle C.
So I want to cover a couple things today. Back in May at the meeting, we brought to you a draft of the criteria that we've been working on. This criteria is based on Department of Ecology guidance with the goal of establishing, right now, Circle C landfill has been on a post-closure permit for about 26 years. We were meeting with them last year, and they asked, when can we get out of this permit? So that's when we realized that we needed to, we've been working with Ecology, and it obviously brought this to you also, to begin to define specific criteria that we would establish that would allow us as a public health department to say that this landfill is not going to create a public health hazard. Under the permit they currently are still required to hold, there are monitoring requirements for groundwater, gas generation, etc. Again, similar to a lot of the things that Mike left, but that we do at Lightmare. So we brought it to you. We brought this to you in May. You had a lot of questions. So we have since been able to spend some time in Kevin, oh, there he is. Kevin Marshall, who's joined us this summer as a temporary staff person, did a lot of research and work on your questions and some issues you raised. We had sent this out to everyone, I believe late last week I sent this out, and I don't know if everyone's had a chance to review it. So I thought what we could do tonight is two things. One is review the questions and some of the information that you were looking for. I'd have Kevin come up and kind of walk through this with us. And then if you have any other additional questions, and then I want to talk a little bit about after this is where we want to go with the criteria based on the questions and issues you've raised. And ultimately at this meeting, if we can, at the end, I'd like to ask if the board could make a recommendation the commission make a recommendation that we move forward with this criteria. The next steps would be that we would be prepared to go and give a presentation to the Board of Health on where we are on this. I did talk to the prosecutor, to Jane today, and that was the recommendation to go bring this to them to make sure they understood this. That would be enough, I think, then to go to the Carlson family that owns this, the children of the person that ran the landfill, who are the landowners, and present this to them, but also and help them understand that we're also going to move forward. I mean, this is my recommendation, but that we would then have a public comment period that would allow citizens of the county and citizens of the center to review this criteria and again provide the health department with any questions, concerns about it before we would then finalize it. And at that point, we would then ask the Carlsons to, if they're still interested in getting out of the permit, to then perform the work to do this analysis. And then as soon as they met the criteria, we could then make a motion, take a move to let them cease the post-closure permit. So I wanted to kind of walk you into where we are today to where we want to take this, but then I'd like Kevin to come up and we'll kind of walk through the questions and the issues that were raised and take any other additional questions and discussion. Okay? And I'll operate if you want.
Okay, can I have hard copies?
Yes, 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 there you go.
Okay, I thought I'd just kind of start going through the questions that were raised during the previous meeting, and this was discussed. There was one issue raised about clarifying the language on the settlement, that to kind of clarify what subsequent years means in it. And so we did, thought that was a good change, and we changed the criteria to read, if the mean exceeds 1/2 inch, the settlement parameter should be reassessed and evaluated the following year and subsequent years until the criteria is met. I don't know if anybody remembers, but the settlement issue is that they'll be taking a lot of elevation readings, points all across the surface of the cap, and take quarterly readings of those throughout a full year of seasons, and see what the average settlement is on those measured points. And if the average is greater than 1/2 inch, then it's considered not stabilized. And so if there's continuing to be settling, this should give some good quantification of that.
Have you walked the ground?
I have not.
Kevin hasn't had a chance to walk that, but I've been out there and the other folks.
Do you see any settling?
Well, with the naked eye,
I know if we're looking for 1/2 inch, but I just wondered if it, you didn't fall in.
No, I mean, when I was out there last year, and again, Melissa goes out there at least twice, if not more, a year as part of her responsibilities. Again, it's just been waiting to get to a certain point. Kevin hasn't been out there, but, you know, again, you look over the surface of the landfill, it seems pretty intact, the grass, the you don't see any differential settling or any low spots. Again, I know that not too long ago at Leichner, there was an area that decompressed quite significantly, but I've heard no reports of anything like that from Melissa at the landfill.
Yeah, none of the reports on the file had any settlement or erosion issues raised. So we don't think there's an issue here, but we just need some quantification that demonstrates that there's no issue.
And again, the clarification was in the original draft of the criteria, and we'll fix this. I spelled Stephen's name wrong, but is that it wasn't clear, like, if they don't do it, if they don't meet that criteria over this first year, how do we account for following years? And so the change that he suggested that we're moving forward with is that it would be reassessed each following year and subsequent years until that criteria that's outlined of 1/2 inch over that time period is met.
Okay, the second question was, how many cubic yards is the site? And what would it take to scrape it out and put it into a lined landfill or use as a cover? I estimated the volume of the landfill in a couple different methods. There was a value used in the landfill gas modeling back in 2003, where the contractors used 500,000 cubic yards of waste in the landfill. And I also took the square footage of the footprint of the active landfill and assumed that there was a 3 meters average waste in it.
and that also came out to be 500,000 cubic yards. So based on that kind of volume, I said, I made an assumption of if it was $50 per cubic yard to excavate, load, and move it to another lined cell, this option would cost about $25 million. That estimate of $58 per cubic yard could be discussed and moved up or down, but even if it was half of that, it's still a significant cost. And another complicating factor with moving the waste is that there's quite a bit of asbestos waste in the landfill. Any type of disturbance of the friable asbestos would just add complexity and cost.
Can they add asbestos? Is that legal just to leave? I mean, I don't know what the regulations are. You can just leave it. Is that correct?
You're better off leaving it.
Yeah. Yes. You don't want to.
You're much you don't better off leaving it.
Right, yeah. The only time you have the exposure and issues is when you need to disturb it.
And you've got a mess.
If you leave it in place, then you're really not subject to any kind of problems.
Even in buildings, if it's not disturbed and it's solid and all that, you best off just
leave it alone.
Okay, the next one had to do with gas production, and the criteria had three segments to it, and the logical reading of that makes it very confusing. Let me just kind of go real quickly on to what those criteria are, and this based on what they call the LEL, the lower explosive limit. And what that LEL actually measures is that's the concentration of gas in air that chemical first becomes explosive. So like people recognize with gasoline, you have a carburetor with meters in gasoline and oxygen to get it right in the middle of the explosive range so it can fire. Gases that are below the LEL concentration would not be explosive, as well as ones that are above it would not be explosive, be too rich. So the three criteria were 100% LEL at the property boundary. Basically cannot exceed that. And the second one is cannot exceed 25% LEL in the on-site structures. And the third one is 25% LEL in the vent pipes from the landfill gas collection system. And I guess the question is, that didn't really make much sense, is that why would it be 100% LEL at the boundary and yet 25% within the landfill? And don't know if I have a great explanation for that, but the property boundary criteria is based on soil gas sampling, and that requirement was set up to monitor lateral migration of landfill gas through the soil, and it was set at 100% with the logic that when the gas leaves the soil, it will diffuse in the air, and therefore dropped below 100%. So when this requirement was set up back in the regs, I think it was set up back in the late 70s, it was felt to be protective of property around landfills. The 25% L on the on-site structures is based on ambient air monitoring. That one is set up to be protective of people, the public and workers that are entering and moving around in the structures to make sure that they're not going to be in an explosive atmosphere. And the 25% LEL measured in the vent pipes of the collection system This one was intended to get a measure of how much gas the landfill is producing. Now, at Circle C, the first two criteria they've been measuring throughout the closure period. They installed 8 soil gas probes around the property boundary and have been monitoring those every monitoring event. And also, they've taken air monitoring of the trailers and crawl space culverts and manholes out there at the site. So there's quite a bit of data on those first two criteria. But the third criteria, there has not been any measurements taken of that.
And the data has, they've always met this criteria. What do we know about
them? No, they have not always met it. Chuck, there was one in the files.
That's on there, yeah, that's on there. Well, I'll just narratively explain it. There's a culvert on one side of the landfill, and there was another location. So on the second criteria, those were considered on-site structures. They were getting measurements above 25%, and it seemed to be a seasonal occurrence. So again, we would have them go back and remeasure there. So there have been some exceedances, but for the soil gas probes around the boundary, I don't think there's been any detections of methane.
Well, there have been early on, back in the first when 5 years or so. Okay. So it has been fairly low in detections, but they are not all zeros. The leachate manhole is probably the one that's taken the most hits on it. And we don't know whether that's gas being generated or if it's intermingled in that collection system. So,
yeah, there's like a tank that's been used to capture the leachate, and so you assume the bottom of that tank has some organic matter, just settled solids. But it just raises that question. We don't know that that's the source of it. It could be the landfill. But, well, again, under this, as we move forward with this, under this criteria, we go back and continue to measure those. I mean, I personally feel that ultimately there is a gas piping system and a system that used to go to a burner that's been turned off for many years because they stopped generating enough gas years ago. I don't know what year it is that they couldn't burn it. You know, they just so we suspect that the gas generation is at a very low level, and that's consistent with old landfills. You know, there's a period when the gas generation really gets peaks and then it slowly goes down over many years. Again, when you have seen data like that. But ultimately, I think if we go into that system and there are some vent pipes and measure there, that's like the most direct at the source measurement of gas generation that we can directly attribute to the landfill. And if they're meeting that criteria, again, we'll look at the other ones too. I feel that gives us a lot of factor of safety on the gas generation issue.
So you're kind of saying that the periphery with those 8 where they were just monitoring where they're at, we're okay. But where things are collected, like at the leachate or at the wellhead where they used to have a flame, that those could be higher because of congregation of them.
You know. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's still a piping system in the landfill that was designed to preferentially capture gases. So
you're going to get more.
Right. If we see it there, then I feel that gives us, or if we don't see it there at this level, that gives us a pretty high level of confidence that we don't have enough gas generation that could cause an explosive threat or some kind of asphyxiation threat to any neighboring structures, etc.
And you're saying within the leachate, it could be leaves and pine needles and stuff like that.
Yeah, this is a very old
like,
tank.
Like tea leaves at the bottom of the cup, you know.
Yeah.
They're going to make new stuff. Okay.
Well, but so we think that the criteria should be, you know, I think a fairly good measure of the stability of that aspect of stability for the landfill. And they've got data for 2 of the items. The third item more data to demonstrate that.
And collecting that kind of data won't be difficult. You know, you'll take a landfill gas meter, you'll find a place where you can, we'll pick several points. I mean, my plan would be to pick several of the areas where there's where they can tap into the gas venting line, and then you hook up a landfill gas meter.
Is this something Mike could do versus they have to go out and contract this out?
Yeah, I think we can talk about how that's done later. Yeah.
Because, you know, we don't want to saddle them with terrible expense over this whole thing.
Well, we'll get to, there's some other things on cost that we'll that we're getting to now. So we'll move on.
Yeah, okay, the next question had to do with leachate production. And I think this was touched on a little bit earlier. Question was, what has been the quantity of leachate and rate over time? Scouring all of the records, there's only been one measurement of the flow rate of leachate coming out of the landfill. And that was in September 2015. And that was measured at about 75 gallons per day. Mm-hmm. Which is fairly low. But measuring the leachate is probably going to be a little bit more complicated than that, because there's also a separate, what they call an under-drain system that was put in right around the closure period. And it is also collecting some of the leachate as well, as well as surface water. The underdrain was set up to pretty much divert surface water and shallow groundwater around the perimeter of the landfill. But when they did do some analysis of the underdrain system and the leachate system back in 1991, they both were contaminated with the same compounds. So they concluded that there is some leachate being collected in the underdrain.
The other key thing to remember, I brought this up before, but it's a detail. This was an old landfill. There was no engineered liner at the bottom of this landfill. So it's not lined like a more modern landfill would, but landfills are. So in regards to leachate, just to add some more context to this, I mean, we don't know this for a fact, but given that some of the leachate quantities seem to go up from the leachate system, go up in the winter months, especially this last winter when we had some heavy rains, there's probably already a groundwater connection when the water table rises up high enough with the bottom of the landfill. And obviously what was found historically from the underdrain also confirms that the bottom of this landfill is not sealed. Now, it was a construction and debris landfill. So by its, and I've never heard anything, again, maybe some of the guys that have been around a long time know some stories, but to our knowledge, there's never been any municipal solid waste or hazardous waste deposited. But again, when you talk to guys that have dealt with landfills for a long time, it's a question. But again, that's part of, we're trying to build in, addressing some of those issues of the unknowns in there. But anyway, that, so it's connected. But again, we're not, and based on existing data, we don't suspect that there's a huge threat, but we still want to quantify and make sure we're certain about the groundwater issues. So I think that's important to keep in mind when we're talking about leachate and groundwater monitoring.
Now, Kevin was saying that this was, in the earlier question, was like 3 feet deep.
What? No, I said 3 meters was just a, a swag.
So we're really not down to the... the water table or anything. We're just 12 or 13 feet deep, right?
Well, I don't know that.
Well, I think the total height of the landfill, again, Devin hasn't had the benefit of going out there, but mm-hmm. I mean, just to give you a mental picture, we have a diagram that it's on my computer, but basically, if you're on the freeway and you're getting ready to get to the La Center exit, the landfill is just off to your right. You can't see it from the road. And the top of the landfill is sort of at the surface grade there. And then it's like in a small ravine that heads towards the center to the northeast. So the rest of the landfill is pretty far down. I'm not even sure, you might know, Don, if it had been mined in the past before it was made into a landfill.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Rock or something. But anyway, so I think when you're talking about groundwater and groundwater elevation, the bottom of the landfill is at a much lower elevation than surface. But I don't really have that number in my head right now. Yeah.
Typically, in the old days, that was a gravel mine before, okay. And then they just filled it up. That was the way it was done.
Okay. The next one has to do with leachate production and groundwater monitoring. Wanted to follow up with testing labs to determine cost estimates to conduct tests required by the draft criteria. And so basically that draft criteria was the WAC 173-200, the groundwater quality criteria. And I was able to get a quote from Test America, and per sample to test for the entire suite of compounds would be just under $2,000 per sample, $1,950. Just for a note on that, by far the most expensive part of that analysis was with the radionuclides and the dioxins. Those two items combined for over half of the total cost. And that's one thing that we kind of discussed is that that might be something that we'd be willing to discuss and negotiate on. We don't realistically expect to have any concerns over radionuclides and dioxins at that site.
So we want to be open-minded and flexible. You asked about the cost, so we wanted to fully represent what those costs were. And again, I think the other way to put it in context is, and we'll go on to the monitoring wells in a second. We're still proposing that we need, and the guidance and the requirements are for three down gradient monitoring wells. When you're going to sample wells, you're also probably going to, there's several up gradient monitoring wells. So nominally, you'd want to get at least one of those, maybe two of those, because you want to be able to compare upgradient groundwater to downgradient from the feature. So just roughly, probably a minimum of something like 4 to 5. So this number, so you take a sample at one point then from all of those wells at the same time and then send those off to the lab. So you'd multiply the sampling cost number by the number of samples. So just to also, so that's a multiplier. So again, 4 to 5 times that, which is, $8,000 to $10,000.
Is that an annual event then?
So what we're proposing in the criteria is that generally you'll do groundwater monitoring on a quarterly basis. There is some historic groundwater data, and I forget the years, that where there were organics, volatile organic compounds. I think some semi-volatile organic compounds that were sampled for in the one down gradient well. None of those results indicate a tremendous amount of organics. I think there was some, mostly non-detects for organics, and then inorganics metals were detected. So again, I'm trying to be open-minded on this, but I think from our perspective, we'd still like to do one more sample set in the downgradient wells of most of the suite, so that as a department, we can say with confidence that based on the historic data and this more recent data, that there's no potential impact from this landfill from the contribution it's making to groundwater. But again, if we went out on that first measurement and got pretty good sampling and it didn't indicate organics, I'd recommend to the health director that we consider not requiring the full suite for the rest of the year.
We never saw any chlorinated hydrocarbons or anything in there, right?
Nothing like that.
We didn't think the dioxin was something that we had to go after either. So I don't think historically there's been anything, right?
I'm not remembering. I don't know if they had ever measured chlorinated in the past. I mean, what I would base it on is if I saw several other organics, given, you know, I've done work in cleanup sites and landfill work, that if, lots of times if you've got lots of organics and unusual materials, you'll see it through other parameters also. So again, the data to date, that it's not been extensive, but there is groundwater data. It doesn't indicate that there should be an issue. So I would use that as a line of evidence, and based on the record of what was put in the landfill, to support stepping away from that. If in the first measurement of three downgradient wells, we did not see any indications of volatiles, semi-volatiles in the groundwater. Yes. We would still continue with several metals and landfill indicated parameters, but not.
Yeah, the monitoring, I mean, the sampling in the one single downgradient well has not shown any evidence of contamination from the landfill. And there's fairly good history on that. They did do volatile organic compounds for 10 years, from 92 to 2002. And they've done select metals and inorganics for the full life of the post-closure. And they have not detected it in that single well. Problem is that the WAC standards, landfill standards, do require three downgradient wells. And for us to be able to make feel comfortable making the decision that there is no groundwater contamination, we do need to have a little better extent look at downgradient areas. Yeah. The actual groundwater contours are not well defined. They were not well defined back in 90 when they went into closure, and there's been no work since then to better define it, to know exactly which direction that uppermost aquifer is flowing. So that's why we really need to have the full complement of three downgradient wells. One is to meet the state regulations, and two is to get the assurance that that single well we have now is indicative of downgradient conditions. Now, I got an estimate from a well driller on the approximate cost to put the well out there. They run about 45 and 50 feet deep in this location. And his estimate was about $100 per foot, so that would be running around $5,000 per well. So to drill two new wells would be another $10,000.
Couldn't you hit pockets of stuff that you really don't, let sleeping dogs lie type thing, It's okay underground and everything else, but if you drill right down into it.
Well, what they do is they drill down through it with a closed casing, and then they screen it in just one small area where the water is saturated. So they purge and develop the well, so they're sampling what's in the water at that depth.
And again, these wells would be outside the footprint of the landfill. Mm-hmm.
So, kind of like just to kind of the full economic costs of so what we're looking at doing is we need to get through a period of confirmation testing to collect additional data to close the fairly extensive data gaps for these criteria before we can move forward with removing them from permit. So just kind of the full economic costs. Currently, their annual monitoring costs are roughly about $15,000 per year. For the full suite quarterly testing with putting in two new wells and monitoring all those wells for 1 year, we're looking at about $54,000. So it's about a little over 3 years worth of sampling accelerated into one.
So that's, and then there was one thing we didn't, that we sort of missed, I want to go back to. There was also this question at the, about the grandfathering, and the, you know, the question came up naturally, why has there only been one downgradient well? And Kevin did a pretty extensive, there's no grandfather agreement that they only have one well. I can't explain, none of us were around when decisions were made or not made to require a more extensive groundwater, downgrading groundwater well system for this facility. But again, based on our desire to be have a high level of confidence, based on the standard that exists for two additional wells, we still feel that's a reasonable request to do that. But there's no agreement that they only have to have one well. I can't try to explain someone that predates us why they didn't.
That wasn't the mode at the time, though.
Huh?
That was not the mode at the time.
I don't know. I don't really know.
How long has the WAC been around? You know, we could.
I don't know.
I think was put in like in 1985, so it's like predates.
Yeah, the landfill. Yeah. Predates the start of the landfill.
Well, that's.
But again, along the way, someone could have come in and asked to do that, but. In my mind, that's just the past, and we're trying to define the criteria for moving forward.
Is that legally, so you recommend doing that? And guide us whether we do it for the 53,000 or whatever. Legally, are we okay? Are we just letting spend 15,000 a year forever?
Well, I don't know how the Carlsons will react to this. Again, I think we've tried to talk. You've had some raised some good questions about the cost to them to do this. We're not trying to make them spend money. We're trying to define the criteria that we can make a decision that's protective of the groundwater. I mean, that's the primary concern. The whether they decide to do it or not is really their choice. They've asked us to do this. We're trying to define what that means. And I feel, again, ultimately, because that's a question, I don't know how they're going to react. Again, I think we've also tried to be mindful that we'll be flexible. If they and their consultants offer alternatives to addressing some of the concerns, we'll be open to discussing those things. Would be my recommendation. And again, it's based on when you look at cleanup sites. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to evaluate it, but this is this proposal that we, whatever proposal we move forward with, because we'd like you to recommend that we do move forward in this way, is our sort of starting proposal.
Just out of intellectual curiosity, Say they decide to spend the $54,000. And what happens after they spend the $54,000 is we get higher readings. So is it then just they have to keep monitoring? Or we get high readings and they have to do mitigation in some way? Or we don't know.
They would make a choice at that point. In other words, if we go out and they get all this data, and they're not meeting several of the criteria, what we're saying is, well, you have to stay on this permit, and the permit requires a lot of the same monitoring. The question is when do they get to the point of the criteria that it no longer presents an ongoing threat, and we can let them off of that kind of due diligence monitoring permit. That's what it is, a post-closure permit.
Okay, so
we would just maintain the permit until some point they met the criteria.
Is there part of the current permit that says if you are way over that you have to do something, or it's just monitoring? Is it just monitoring and reporting, and it doesn't matter what's coming out?
I'm kind of answering or that. Yeah, if they do get a hit on their dial. Gradient monitoring, then they get put into, there's a couple of categories of increased enforcement. First one is a period of assessment, where the
testing and monitoring gets stepped up so we can really define, is this just a single hit, or we have a plume coming out of this landfill.
Right.
So you go through this assessment period and you define exactly what's happening there. And then once you get an assessment on that, then you would go into needed, go into active cleanup water.
Correct.
Actions. Yes.
And it might depend on what's in, what you're getting, right?
Yeah. That's all part of
the hexavalent system. Chromium is going to be something different than something else, I assume, right?
There would be health risk assessments that would be done, things like that.
So they're taking a risk here. If they go down this path, they're taking a risk. They put in two more wells. So right now it is a sleeping dog's lie.
Right. Exactly.
It's, you know, I pay $15,000 a year, but I'm passing everything and I don't have to worry about what potentially could be a bad situation. Or I take the risk, spend the $54,000. There's probably a very minimal chance that something bad happens, but there still is that chance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, okay.
Or you spend the $54,000, you're closed and you're done. Mm-hmm.
That's what we think is, Mike and I speak for that, is very much most likely, but I think the risk is pretty small.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and again, all we're asking is to following the guidance and you know, to get the rest of the data, and that we can make that call with a high degree of confidence. And I tend to believe that absolute certainty doesn't exist. But I think this is what we're proposing, and I think they'll get there. I think the other side of it is, we haven't talked to them, but we're defining it for if someone else comes along and buys it. You know, I mean, this is the other thing I would just add, and I can't speak to their motivations, but it's about a 30-acre property. And this is 8 acres of it. It's right next to a growing community that has this, well, looks like it may have this huge entertainment center just down the road. If you look at the potential development, I don't know what this land's really worth. There's other incentives for people to take these costs on. I mean, and I'm bringing my cleanup background into this. There are lots of old contaminated sites that as soon as they became valuable developmental property, cleanup money showed up and they got it done. So I feel that's part of what could play out in the future too.
So one more question, I think just one more question. So let's say we present them, this gets presented to them with a $54,000 bill and they say, not going to do it, we're going to stay on the current, under the current permit. We've now realized that the current permit does not meet standards. So would the county take the position of, if you're going to stay on the current permit, you would need to come up to the standards and you'd need to put in the two additional wells anyways?
That would be my recommendation. I would pursue that, absolutely.
I mean, it's kind of like the other discussion we had. There are folks who have wells in the area.
Right.
We want to be able to tell the public that we've done due diligence, especially according to the WAC, that we're doing what we can to protect the groundwater. And if it turns out, which we think is going to happen, that we don't find anything in those other two wells, then we can reassure anybody who lives down gradient from this that they don't have anything to worry about. Is that?
Yeah.
I'd like to make a motion that we ask you to proceed with this project.
And that would be moving forward with the criteria as we defined. Okay.
I'll second it.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's passed.
Thanks. Thanks. A lot of good
great
questions.
Great job
by Kevin.
Great questions.
Thanks, Kevin.
The last presentation, given timing, we can send out to PowerPoint. So we can send that one out with the email. Save us some time.
Or I can present it next month, which actually some of the numbers I have are more draft numbers anyways. so it might be better for the next month.
Leave it there.
Yeah.
Good day. Okay. So put it on the next month. Yeah. Any other comments?
I'd like to mention that the reflector's doing a due diligence for sure. They had their last, I think it was just last week, week's paper, they had the report on the recycled art thing. They had the car recycles. There was a big article about chipping up the cars, and, you know, doing that. How to get rid of your appliances and composting ads and everything else. So they're really backing our solid waste, and just like to mention that that's it. I have a kind of a funny, got an email the other day, and it said that in North Dakota that they voted 35-10 in their Senate to devote a 650-acre site, and they were going to name it the Barack Obama Memorial Landfill. It was going to be the largest in North Dakota and the 13th largest in the United States. But unfortunately, Snopes says it's false. But Obama only has a 35% rating in North Dakota. So only in North Dakota would they do that.
Anybody else? The meeting's adjourned. I thank you all for your years of work. I appreciate working with you.
No, I'm again, do on your Tuesdays. Or Thursdays. Thursday.
He's Thursday. I have done.
Speaking of papers, you got a nice writing.
I did. I've had a couple of good days. Ignore me for 2 years, and I'm printing a couple of good things.
It was you that were describing.
I know, right? Pinch yourself.
What is he?